Intentions for this podcast, eh?
No.
I don't think I'll be cruel at all.
That's a change. Welcome to the Complete Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. That's Ian Ferguson enjoying March Madness. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about some fun doodads and doohickeys. Is that the expression?
Doohicks. Yes, doohickeys.
Another video game on Pawn Stars. It's the quarterly where we talk about that, talking about cheaters being branded in a game. The 3DS 10th anniversary just passed, and we'll talk about a Patreon poll topic and other stuff that you may find enjoyable, you may find boring.
We're really trying to pull these podcasts together for you in a time of slow news.
There's stuff going on, but people want to hear about stuff in our lives. Ian, it's not about the topics. It's about me. So what did you do this weekend besides enjoy March Madness?
I actually did stuff this weekend. I did enjoy March Madness. I watched some more games. Unfortunately, Syracuse lost.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, Syracuse lost, and then the Beavers lost. I was kind of rooting for the Beavs. Oregon State, they were, I think, a 12 seed and should not have made it nearly as far as they did. They should not have made it to the Elite Eight, which is where I think we were. Yeah, Elite Eight.
I always have a soft spot in my heart for Syracuse because that's where from my fraternity, they took us on our pledge trip, which basically forced you to drink for like 4 days.
Yeah.
And the highlights were, I did commit a crime there, like the only crime I ever committed.
Nice.
Wasn't caught, almost arrested. That's all the conversation. But they took us to, sorry to cut you off, Ian, because I'll never bring up Syracuse again. There was a place in Syracuse, maybe you know what it is, where it's like they give you a gigantic frittata, and if you can eat it, it's free. It was like a diner type of place. I'm talking, it was like four pounds of food.
My only connection to Syracuse is actually that's where my aunt went to college. And okay. I have many aunts, too. It's just that was the team that got me into college basketball.
The Orange Men, right? Is that what it is?
The Orange, yeah.
Orange people.
Just yeah, I think it's just the Syracuse Orange at this point.
Are the women in the tournament as well as Syracuse? The women tournament?
I don't know if they were this year, honestly.
Okay. They've been covering the women's tournament more this year than usual to get more parity, at least on the ESPN.
I watched it a little 2 years ago, and honestly, I enjoyed it more than I thought. I try not to be one of those people who talk shit about women's basketball because everyone talks shit about women's basketball.
I don't mind it. It's a different game, obviously. But after not enjoying the men's game that much, I think I'm willing to give the women's a try to see if it's more cohesive because there's some sloppiness in these men's games. At least the one I saw with my Ducks, my Oregon Ducks, there was sloppy play.
Yeah,
I mean, they're trying. They're just not world class talents. And this is the problem. Not to get into the offshoot. This is the problem that they face in men's basketball going forward. Is they don't have that requirement to go to college anymore, or go to the NBA. A lot of these the best talent are not going to be in college going forward. They're just going to skip and go to the NBA at 18 or go play in Europe for a year. Like the men's game is going to suffer for college going forward.
Sure,
but it just is. I mean, they were even saying it's like, yeah, there's not a lot of like world class talent on these teams. There's not like, it used to be like, there'd be like 8-10 guys in the tournament that, you know, oh, these guys are definitely going to the NBA, are going to be stars. Not so much anymore. It's not like how it used to be back in our day. So they're going to have to figure that out. Or pay them to get them to stay in school.
Yeah.
There's one person that complained about us suggesting that. It's like, oh, well, they're getting that education. You see the parody
fuck
is not the same.
Off. Just that's, fuck off.
The parody is not the same of like, oh, you're getting your tuition versus we're making billions of dollars off of you. Like, there's just not close to being
I
parity.
Hate this bullshit that everything has to be the same as it's always been. If things were hard for me, it's got to be hard for them. No. No, fuck off. The NCAA is making so much money off of these kids' backs.
They can trickle down some to the kids. I'm not even talking about, they're not going to be millionaires. Give them like, I don't know, 20 grand or something per year. you know, or something. Give them some profit share and some. If you're using the kids' name, they should be paid. Like, that's always bothers me. You're using the kids' names and selling jerseys. Or putting them in video games and they're still not making money.
Selling
off of
fucking
that.
Advertisements. That's where it comes down to.
They put them on advertisements. They put them on the advertisements.
But you watch March Madness in the amount of ads that are sold during it, and the athletes don't get paid.
It's ridiculous.
Eat my fucking ass if you think you are ever going to make a convincing argument to me about why they should not get paid. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's not.
Or they get an education. Because a college fucking education means anything these days.
Well, it should in theory, but...
Yes, it should. but it doesn't. I mean, yes, it should, but it doesn't. I mean, how many people out there with college fucking degrees still can't get jobs?
Depends upon your industry. But, no. I will say... Wow, he's getting into Michael Bay Ninja Turtles mode.
All right. Okay, what?
I didn't mean to set you off like that, Ian. You've been like that set off in a while. I was gonna say, I lost my stomach for watching the event though, when like the announcers get super critical of their kids. They're like 19-year-old kids, 20 years old, and obviously they're trying their hardest. They don't have the skills of professionals. They don't. They can't make shots. They have, you know, they don't have the they have sloppy dribbles. They make dumb passes. They're kids though, and some of these commentators are so critical of them, and it's like they're kids. They're not getting paid. They're like student athletes, and they're not going to play pie basketball again after this tournament. Some of them, like, this is it for them. This is their last hurrah.
You don't need to sound like a fucking disappointed dad.
It's like, oh, you got to watch the foot on the line there. It's like, okay, 65-year-old analyst. This is a kid that's probably nervous. He's playing in front of millions of people watching TV. He, come on, man. And that's where I think I lost my stomach. Maybe that's why subconsciously I can't get into it. And then they show the kids crying on the sidelines after they lost. Like, I mean, close-ups of the kids fucking bawling. And I'm like, I don't need to see this shit. I mean, come on. I don't need to see this. I know it's emotional. I felt dirty. I just kind of felt dirty. It's exploitative in all aspects. That's how it felt to me. Maybe that's why I don't like it. It's exploitative on a lot of levels.
I mean, and I always say this. People always, you know, try to bring this up. It's I hate everything that surrounds it. I just like watching the game.
You know, like the pageantry. That's what I was talking about. I like the pageantry of the game.
I just like watching the game of college basketball.
Okay.
I like watching kids with that approximate skill level play basketball.
It's like if we did a pickup game, you know, almost. It's like,
no,
toss
Pat.
The ball around.
You would get wiped by a Div 1 kid.
I'm being facetious.
I know. No, watching me play basketball, no.
We used to do a lot of pickup games my teenage years. I was good rebounder. I could box out, but I'm too small, and I got smallish hands for a guy.
I think I made a joke to Norm once dribble. about maybe doing like a pickup game at a convention.
Oh, sometime. I totally would. Except half of us would probably get injured.
Yeah, no, I would. My shoulder would be thrown out, or my neck would be thrown out immediately.
I've sprained both my ankles to the point where they're impossible to sprain again because they healed incorrectly. So the flexibility's gone. So I can't roll my ankles anymore. It's like impossible to roll them. The major injury, sports injury I had was, it wasn't pickup, but it was intramural. I tore my ACL, intramural basketball, my freshman year in college, going for a rebound, and a guy knocked into me. It was basically the Clay Thompson injury. He knocked into me. I landed on the one leg only, all the way awkwardly, and there went my ACL popped. So that's why when I see the Clay Thompson injury, it's, oh, I get it, because that's what I went through, was that. And that's a horrible recovery. Probably easier 20 years later. The sports medicine stuff has worked out a little bit more, but that wasn't fun. I don't talk about my injury much, but that was not fun. That recovery, that was a full year of recovery for me. Now you can get back in like 7 months, 6 months. Sometimes with like, obviously if you're a professional athlete, it's a lot better. But yeah, it's a tough one. ACL and the good old Achilles, which the people are suffering now. Those are the two biggies.
So what else did I do this weekend? Played a lot of Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter came out on the Switch. I love that series. That's behind on my Patreon writing, but that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to put together like a beginner's guide to it, since I've seen a lot of people who always want to get into Monster Hunter. But the first few hours you're playing Monster Hunter can be very rough. The game does not... It's not an overly complex game once you get into the actual gameplay loop of Monster Hunter, but they throw a lot of stuff at you early on.
Lots of ins, lots of outs.
Lots of different ways. Yeah, there's different crafting, you know, different different quest lists, and a lot of people just
kind of... in the pool.
A lot of people, yeah, bounce off of it pretty hard. But it only takes a couple hours to get used to it, and then it's really, really fun. But I have a feeling it's going to sell like crazy on the Switch.
It was on the Switch before this?
It was. Okay. But the one that they put on the Switch before it was an enhanced version of one of the 3DS ones. Generations Ultimate, called XX in Japan. It's good. I liked it, but it was definitely... It came out after Monster Hunter World came out for the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, and the PC. And Monster Hunter World really kind of modernized it a little bit. Made some big changes, I think, that helped people get into it.
Big changes.
But the one that they put on the Switch was an older style one that was harder, I think, for people to get into. This is definitely more in line with World, a bit easier to get into. But yeah, there's still a learning curve. But yeah, it's great. I've played far too much. I love making the armor for my little dog and my cat.
They fight with you? They fight alongside with you. They paw at the monsters?
You can ride the dog around.
How big's a dog? It's like a St. Bernard?
It's big.
Big dog.
Big dog.
And never-ending story dog?
And then Vani and I have been like catching up on TV. We finished watching Cora the... I almost said Cora the Explorer.
I was going to say, Cora the Explorer? Is that a thing? Is that a sequel?
Avatar, The Legend of Cora, which was really good. And then randomly we started watching... we watched the first few episodes of the of Invincible that just was put on Netflix, I believe it is. Invincible was
Prime, I think.
Okay, could have been Prime. I don't know. Whatever.
I think it's Prime. I saw commercials before I fell asleep watching. I listened to the waves.
Mm.
So sometimes there's ads. Prime, Invincible. Let me say.
Invincible.
Invincible. Yeah, it's on Prime.
Okay, she fired it up. Actually, pretty good so far. I enjoyed it. I never read the comic, but I am familiar with Kirkman's work. I'm familiar with The Walking Dead. It's kind of like a teenage story. There's like some high school drama and stuff like that, but it's very, very violent. That's the thing about it. It doesn't...
Like The Boys?
Yeah, it doesn't... It's not quite The Boys, but it doesn't shy away from the realities of superhero fighting.
Okay.
So
it's got that Watchmen reality where if you really fought people, they would die. Basically.
Yes, there's guts and there's blood, and it's interesting. I think what I find interesting about it is not so much the story, because even though this is older, this was written, I think, 2002, 2003, the original comic. It's interesting because the style they do it in is very bright. It's a very bright cartoon. It looks like... To me, it looks like those cartoon the 90s superhero cartoons. It reminds me of the X-Men cartoons and Batman the Animated Series
Spider-Man
animated. And it's kind of got a little bit of that style. So you're like, oh yeah, this is meant to look like something I watched
but
in the 90s.
Violent.
And then there's blood everywhere.
I think that's funny. Brent did a song when Spider-Man game came out, 2.5 years ago at this point? Just how you are murdering everyone as Spider-Man. Like if Spider-Man was really fighting these guys with the stuff he's doing, swinging around things with his web and crashing into people and doing these ridiculous spin kicks in people's heads, he would be knocking people's heads off. It's like you have to be so restrained if you actually had these powers. You can't just go around punching people. You would crush their faces in if you punch them.
It's funny because the difference, like Vani and I just watched 4 seasons of Cora, finished it. You know, it was great, but it's a kid's show. I mean, this one was a little bit more mature in its themes than say Avatar: The Last Airbender was. But this is the follow up. It was a little bit more mature, and you know, it's a little bit more realistic about the realities of war and fighting and stuff. But still, like you just see entire ships get blown up, and then it's like like G.I. Joe or whatever. You know, the next scene, everyone's just floating around. You know, like they're totally fine.
They jump out of the Rattler, the Cobra pot before it gets shot. You know,
yeah. There's a guy who was basically trying to destroy the world, and in your head or in another show, you're thinking, oh, this person's probably dead. But then like they find out a few episodes later, they can go. Visited in prison.
Oh, like, great. Yeah, keep it light. Speaking of that, did I mention WandaVision? I finally watched it. Did I say that? Oh yeah,
he mentioned it to me. I don't think he mentioned it
to get the taste out of my mouth. That's right, I didn't mention it because we're running long. To get the taste out of my mouth after watching Zack Snyder's Justice League, which by the way, the black and white version now you can watch with I think they put an alternate Joker take at the end or some bullshit. Anyway, so WandaVision it was better than I gave it credit for originally. Talking about it, it was good. It wasn't just a setup for the future. They subtly referenced the future, like, oh, basically, do you realize what you've done, Wanda? You've probably created, without saying it, you've probably created alternate realities now, because now you're too powerful. Like,
right.
They opened the door to the Doctor Strange movie next year, and I guess the Spider-Man movie that's coming out at the end of the year is also a multiverse movie. So, like, this is the subtle gateway to that. But, boy, is it padded. I'm tired of them padding out these series. I bitched about that with Jessica Jones, how it was like 4 episodes too long originally. This was a 10-episode series. It could have been 7 or 8 episodes. It's like once you get to like episode 7 or 8, it's like you can see it, like they're just really dragging the damn thing out at that point.
Mm.
Hopefully Falcon and Winter Soldier is not like that, because the first 2 episodes have been fantastic. I mean, it looks like, I was sort of WandaVision, but this is like it's a movie. It's like a movie broken up. It's like the effects are so good. These are would pass for a regular, you know, release in a movie theater for that. So I'm really into Falcon Winter Soldier so far. They release, well, I think, every Friday. So I think it's only 6 episodes, though, Falcon Winter Soldier. And Sharon Carter comes back this Friday. Haven't seen her. We haven't seen her since Civil War. They tossed her to the side. Remember, oh, she's making out with Cap. Now she's gone. You know, they kind of forgot about her, because now it's weird going back to Peggy at the end of Endgame. Spoilers. So she's back. She was always a good character.
Yeah,
I liked her in the 2 movies she was in. She was great in Winter Soldier, and then in Civil War she shows up for that quick scene. So they got her back in the mix. And that's our Disney Plus recap of the week, which our pal Andre usually does. He gets paid to do it. We don't.
Our streaming service update.
Yes, our streaming service update.
Update.
Speaking of updates, Ian, the Little Nemo Kickstarter, congratulations to them. They hit their 70,000 goal
last night. I know they were very, very close when I checked yesterday.
They're at almost 73,000 with 41 hours to go, so that'll close by, what is that, Pat Math, like Thursday. So if you want to get in on the action, there you go. But they're going to make the game, in theory. Yeah, there you go. And they got, this is a recent, Mega Ran's doing the soundtrack.
Oh,
so I spoke to the director of the team, and he's like, "Oh, Mega Ran's actually a huge Nemo fan, so he wanted to come on." I was like, "Whoa, that's what? All these Nemo fans that we didn't know existed are like coming together." I was like, "What?
That's great!
All you guys out there coming together, like this is our time. It's our time to give Nemo his due." So that's fantastic. So check out the Kickstarter if you want to get in on it, or otherwise, when it comes out, I'm sure you'll be able to buy it. When is it supposed to come out? They're looking at. You're looking at a year and a half. You're looking at October of next year, it looks like. Yep, October 2022. So there you go. You got about a good 18 months to go on that.
Woo!
Real quick, there's a Howard Scott Warshaw article that came out on Wired by Jeremy Bonner. It's an interview about him, about pleading... Jerry Bonner, not Jeremy. Howard Scott Warshaw pleads not guilty to killing video games. Talks about the infamous E.T. game, his new book, and why Steven Spielberg still hasn't called him back. I haven't gone through all the article, but I did not realize that Howard has a book out, a memoir that came out in December.
Oh.
I had no clue. Called Once Upon Atari, How I Made History by Killing an Industry. And it's only $10 on Kindle or $15 on paperback. And Howard is one of the nicest guys on the planet. I've weirdly got to know him over the years, like seeing him once every like 2 years at conventions, and I first met him at the AVGN shoot in the desert back in, my God, that was 2011. That was 10 years ago.
Jeez,
that's when I first met the man. He's moved on he's like a family therapist, and he helps people like that. He's obviously out of the video game industry, but he still comes back to like Portland every year or two. He'd come back and show up, and like I said, nicest guy in the world. And so it's probably very interesting. Once Upon Atari, How I Made History by Killing an Industry. Spielberg, give him a call back. Come on. It wasn't his fault. You want to do too much, Steven. He famously said once Steven gave his vision of the game, and then Howard responded, I think, sort of bluntly, like... it was the opposite. He gave the vision of the game to Steven Spielberg, and Spielberg responded, can we just do like a Pac-Man thing?
Yeah.
But Howard had this more grandiose vision of it. Then he's got to find out, oh, you got to do the game like in 6 weeks. And it's like, what? Okay. We got to get it out for the holidays and disappoint millions of children. We got to do that. There's an update as well on the Sony store closures we talked about last week.
Yes. Update. God, that's twice. So basically, the closures are happening. this link does not give me the exact dates that I was really hoping that it was going to give me.
Oh, okay.
However, some important things to... Yeah, I was hoping this was the bullet-pointed list. There are some... So, they are closing in July, I believe, is the PS3 and PSP, a little bit later for Vita. From what they are saying, at least for right now, sales will stop, but games will still be able to be... Games that you have purchased will still be able to be downloaded after the fact.
So the servers will still be running to download them.
Yes.
You can't get new games.
So as of right now, this is not like, you know, when the Wii Shop went offline and that was it. Done. This, at least, you still have the... you know, the buffer. So if
you
own the games, you can still download them.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting because it's something we talked about last week, and I missed it because I was literally just focusing on games. But you know, the PS3 and the 360 are really the first systems that are just super, super server dependent. In terms of, you know, updates for games and things like that. You know, a game like Fallout New Vegas was released, you know, super broken and does not play properly until you download that first patch. So they've got to kind of figure out a way to keep that stuff up. Otherwise, you're going to have entire systems that are just useless.
So here's the dates. July 2nd for closing the store on PS3. And then for the handhelds, for Vita, it's August 27th. So you get another almost 2 months to do it.
Is PSP closed with the PS3 or with the Vita?
It's not on this listing here. I'm assuming it'll be the same for PSP and PS3 since they're the older ones,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
And from what I read, the web stores are already gone. They already shut those down. So, like, you should be able to, like, access things on the web store and a browser. Those are gone. They already shut those. It's only through the console now.
Gotcha.
You can get it. Because people were talking about that on Twitter. It's like, well, if you want to even check out, like, a trailer for something, the listings for those games are already, like, gone off the web. So it's like, okay, well, who's doing that anyway? But it's just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's where we're at. But going forward, this is going to be the norm. Not our norm, but the norm. Who I caught on the phone yesterday. Norm's doing well.
Hey, Norm.
He gave me the skinny on the new next episode coming up. I won't spoil that for you.
Oh, yeah.
Got the inside skinny there. Speaking of patches, which was a nickname that only one kid in grade school gave me for some reason. He called me Patch and tried to make it stick. I don't know why he called me Patch, because I guess Patch. It was literally one kid that said, hey, you're Patch. Hey, Patch. And I'm like... His name was David. And I'm like, David, like, why are you calling me Patch? Oh, it's like the name for you. I'm like, I don't have one eye. I'm not a... Anyway, that's what brought me back. There's a giant patch for Cyberskunk could be a nice game.
Cyberskunk
would be like a 3DO game.
Yes.
Cyberpunk had a massive 33 gigabyte or so patch come out yesterday, an update patch. And I was talking to Ian before, like, on my phone, I couldn't scroll through it. It's hundreds of items that they've updated, individual mission things, bugs. Then at the end, it's like, oh, here's the updates for making sure you can basically play the game better on a past console. It's at the end. It probably doesn't fix it 100%, but this is probably where they should have been back in December when they release a game. For the amount of things I saw, Ian, mm-hmm. that was like common sense. Well, the NPC character is dead, but it's still moving around. Like, these are like major bugs. These aren't just like random things, a lot of this. So... There you go. Well, hopefully it has a life past like No Man's Sky did, and people enjoy it and enjoy it. But my God, they couldn't wait till like now to release the game. They couldn't just wait like 4 months.
Yeah.
Give me the profits now.
Well,
I mean, them now.
Yeah, they had already delayed it, and I don't think they were breathing down their neck. Got to get it out.
Those stockholders. Yeah, that's about it. I won't forget about you at UltimateNintendo.com. I won't forget to send you books. Enamel pins, RBI baseball stickers. I sold a couple yesterday, if you so please. Right there. Ian's excited about that. Did you have a sticker? You want to put one on? Oh, yeah, so there's no room on the back there.
Nah, no room anymore.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's a good game.
I'll be on Twitch. It's been every Wednesday, almost a year, Ian. I think we're coming up to week 50 tomorrow, I believe.
Wowzers.
Twitch.tv/ContraCode. I usually begin around roughly 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, or 4:30 Pacific. I go for 2.5 hours, and people have fun. I figure out how to make the emotes, those emotes, and they're fun. And Ian will never stop in. It breaks my heart. Oh, and on Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry. I'll give you a shout out, a hello. I will not show you my feet. Now I'm getting people I got one person who sent me a request saying, "Pat, I will not ask you to show your feet, but request something." I'm like, "Oh, thanks." So now it's a thing. Did you see that some sort of the Suicide Squad trailer, Ian?
I did, and I don't remember anything about it. It entered one eye. It entered my eyes and left out my ears. But I mean,
it looks okay. It looks good. I think it looks fun. You got a good director. You got John Cena's massive arms in the trailer. Holy shit.
John Cena's always amusing to watch in movies. My coworker and I were talking about this the other day. A lot of times wrestlers are like make pretty good like actors, the fun actors to watch. Roddy Piper was fun to watch as an actor. The Rock has always been fun to watch as an actor. I mean, nothing special, but fun. And John Cena, it seems like he's got a decent knack for comedic timing.
The Blockers was a good movie. Did you see that?
No, I did not see that.
That's a really good movie.
Yeah.
And like,
I know you liked it.
It was surprising because it took the perspective of losing your virginity, but from high school girls, not boys.
Right.
And it was Ike Fahrenholtz. John Cena was the second father, and I forget the third off the top of my head, but it was surprisingly good and well-written. It had some heart. It was an R-rated comedy, but there was some heart to it. That came out, like 3-4 years ago? I've lost track of time. But Cena to me is a good actor because he's willing to, the expression, show ass. It's like he's willing to look like a buffoon in the movies.
Yes.
Something The Rock is not done nearly to the extent, especially the past years. But anyway, so yeah, they bring back, Rick Flagg, Harley Quinn's back. You have Amanda Waller. Was that Viola Davis, who was good in the first one, from what I remember. The first one's a bad movie. And then you have the Boomerang guy, who was Jai Courtney, I think is his name, Jai Courtney, who was actually pretty funny in the first one. So there's like 20 characters, so a lot of them are going to get killed probably, which is part of the Suicide Squad, right? It's like they're like C-list villains, B and C-list villains that come together to save the world or to do a mission, which is a good it's like the Dirty Dozen, but super villains. That's basically what it is.
It's a good idea.
No, it's a great idea. The first movie was horrible. And they show this King Shark character eating people in the trailer.
So. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So they're leading into the goofiness of some of these villains. And then instead of Will Smith back, they were going to originally recast with Idris Elba, but Idris Elba's like, "I don't want to take Will Smith's place." So they basically made a different character called Bloodsport.
Yes.
Is his name. So, but it's basically, it's like the Deadshot character. It's kind of like he has guns and stuff, but so you got Idris in there. You got a good cast. You got the guy who was the last Doctor Who in there. I forget his name. It's a really good cast.
I can't say I'm excited for it, but I will definitely watch it and give it a shot.
Yeah, when you look at the people in it, Michael Rooker's in it.
Yeah, it's tons of people. The cast is what has made me want to watch
Taika Waititi, the director's in it. I'm looking at the names of some of these people. Joel Kinnaman's in it. Yeah, there's a lot. There's some heavy hitters in here. Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live's in it somehow. He made probably a minor role.
I can't remember what character he's playing.
I can picture him getting offed. I don't picture him surviving the whole movie. So anyway, Nathan Fillion's in it, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see him in the trailer, unless he's just doing a voice of someone. Yeah, so there you go. Fun times.
Oh, you know what I wanted to say, and I didn't, about Invincible, speaking of voices? You know who I just recently realized does voice acting and is really good at it? Let me just see if I can find it. The guy who played JJ in the Spider-Man movies, and
J.K. Simmons?
Yes, and he was one of the Nazis in Oz. That's what I know him from. J.K. Simmons does a lot of voice acting, apparently.
Oh,
I didn't even know he was the voice of a main character in Legend of Korra.
Okay.
And I really liked that character, and I didn't even know until the series ended that he did the voice. And I found out because he does a voice in Invincible. He's like one of my favorite voice actors. Holy shit! I didn't realize it was him.
It was not that voice like this. So it's
It was Someone had like posted a picture of like Tenzin, JJ, the character from Invincible, and someone else. And I was like, holy fuck! I had no idea these were all the same people.
Most importantly, Ian, he was Commissioner Gordon in Zack Snyder's Justice League. Most importantly.
I heard that. I had no idea.
And I remember at the time, which is only one scene in the movie, by the way, but he got in shape for the movie. I remember the time he got ripped to be in the movie. Like, he's in his 60s. He got ripped for that. And at the time, why is Commissioner Gordon getting ripped for this movie? He doesn't need to.
He is a muscle-bound grandpa.
Yeah. I walked past him one time. Other people have had run-ins with Hollywood celebrities. I never have. I haven't had one. But the one time I did, where I almost said hi to him, I didn't want to bother him. It was a Jim Gaffigan show over here, was like eight, nine years ago. And you get out of your seats. It's by, on the bay over here. And you get out and you walk out. I'm walking out of our seats. It was an outside venue. He's just sitting on the end, like sitting like this, like just waiting for him to leave. He probably knows Jim Gaffigan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like looking down, like, who's this ball guy? I'm like, holy shit, that's J.K. Simmons. He's literally like where you, like closer from me and you. Like he's like, I'm walking past aisle. I was like, what am I going to say to him? Hey, you're awesome. And then go. So I didn't say anything, but he was just smiling and, you know, no one was noticing him though. He kind of looks very specific. No one was stopping. It's like, holy shit. Like I was a surprise.
Weird.
Do you want me to spoil Far From Home for you? No.
Sure, I don't care.
Okay, well, J.K. Simmons comes back as J. Jonah.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
But I won't tell you the spin about how he comes back. Okay. I'll leave that for you. But it's a clever spin. So they brought the same character back on a different attitude. Go see Far From Home, Ian. It's a good movie. God, I can't wait for that third one. If Tobey Maguire is really in it. I'm like, that's the only nostalgia trip I want to get on. End that character properly.
Sure.
End that set of movies properly. The Andrew Garfield stuff, yeah, sure, whatever. But end those movies properly. That third movie was probably the biggest letdown in my cinema life was Spider-Man 3. I walked out numb. I wasn't even mad. I was like, what? They screwed that up.
Especially because the second one was so
good. Oh, my God,
so
it's excellent. There was just, on Twitter the other day, was
one of those rare situations where the sequel is, like, better than the original.
It was fantastic. Spider-Man 2 is one of the top five superhero movies. I didn't make my list. People were asking, what was your Mount Rushmore of superhero movies? Like, Spider-Man 2 would be on it. I put the original Superman on it because of how important it was. People don't go back to it, but it's fucking awesome.
I don't know what I'd have. Spider-Man 2 and Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier.
Be on there.
Maybe X-Men 2.
X-Men 2
is
pretty good.
It was really good at the time. Good. Anyway, do you want to do a do-it-yourself GBA arcade kit, Ian?
Oh, yeah, we saw this. Something.
Don't want to talk about it? Okay, you don't have to.
I was looking at, I mean, it's neat. It's neat, but I don't think it would actually be very comfortable to play.
So what is it? It's like, it's like little pieces like wood you put together?
It looks like little particle or cardboard that you pop out, kind of like a Labo. I love stuff like this. It's fun to build, it's fun to make, and I think it looks cool. I think it's more of like a way to store your Game Boy Advance SP because I can't see it as being particularly fun to play that way.
So this person's selling it, Retro Joy Gaming on Twitter. Is he selling them? Oh,
what?
It said only about 6 years I first came up with the idea. The first kit went out yesterday, so yeah, it's ready to go. It's in a package. It's like, it looks like it's shipped flat. You get stickers to put on it. What a great idea. I mean, you're the Game Boy guy, and it looks because it's set up for it, because the screen swings out, so
yeah.
It's set up like an arcade.
I think it looks really,
it's
really
adorable.
Cool.
He's playing your favorite arcade game in the picture, Double Dragon. He's playing in the picture.
No!
He's playing, it looks like the NES Double Dragon in the picture. And then on the marquee, it says Nintendo, and then it's on the side, there's like 80-ish, like the stripes, three
yeah.
stripes.
Mm-hmm.
It looks adorable.
It does look
What a
very
great
nice.
Idea. I'm now interested in seeing what this costs, if he sells this, what the cost would be. But this is sort of brand new. There. What's also brand new, yet to be released, is the Intellivision Amico.
Mm-hmm.
It's set to come out. 28% chance, I believe I gave it 28% or 32. 28% chance on October 10th, 2021. So they had an impromptu public showing at the National Video Game Museum in Frisco, Texas.
No masks, just a bunch of sloppy assholes all not wearing masks.
Some people had masks, but Tommy Tallarico was not wearing a mask. A couple of other people were not wearing masks. Stuttering Craig showed up without a mask. And I'm not trying to mask shame people, but you got to be a little bit smart. Just a little bit. And it's just common courtesy. You know, I don't want to hear, oh, I had the vaccine, I'm fine. I mean, it's
cool.
Common
you can
courtesy.
Still spread it. You just don't get it. You can still carry it.
It's just common courtesy. Just don't be a fucking, just don't do it. I know in Texas, not to get off the topic, Texas is now optional. The governor says it's optional to wear a mask there, but just come on. We're like 4 months away from almost everyone getting vaccinated at this rate. 4 months. It's like, we've done it for this long. Just mask up for like 3, 4, 5 more months, and we should be in the clear once we get everyone with the vaccine. But whatever, that's not the point.
I would just like to say that if you're tired of our spicy takes on wearing masks, because they're very spicy, very controversial, fuck off.
Yeah, it was weird. Someone said that, like, oh, stop talking about politics in your videos. It's like, we haven't talked about politics since the insurrection.
Stop watching me.
But
stop paying attention to me.
Mask is not a political issue. It's a science issue, and it's a public public health safety issue. It has nothing to do. So if you believe that has something to do with politics, that says more about your worldview than ours.
Yeah.
If you think we've talked about climate change or anything else has anything to do with politics, it really doesn't. It doesn't. So, sorry. Getting off the topic topic there. But anyway, so they set up an Amico. I think they had three or four controllers. There's some YouTubers, including ones that have attacked us personally, that put out videos. So I will not say their names or reference their videos for you to check out because they're asshole people. But from those videos, you gathered a few things. But first off, why do this? Well, their round of public funding on Republic goes off in 2 weeks on April 15th. So Tommy had, like, in the background, you can see, like, a professional videographer there. They're trying to pump up to get the last funding going. That's why they're doing this. There's no reason to hold a public event like this far out, especially in this sort of environment like this on short notice. But they're trying to squeeze every little last drop of blood out of the investors that they can. And don't worry, we'll get into the investing at some point. We never talk about the investing and how bad it is and the details. That's on a rainy day. We're going to do that. But they showed off some games there. They showed off a few controllers. It was being played on the GTO Red version of the console. Ian, you know how we like these consoles to have multiple colors? That's such a great idea.
Definitely necessary.
So what are the takeaways here, Ian? What were your takeaways after looking at a little bit of this? Did you have any main takeaways?
My main takeaway, something that I thought was interesting, was that the two games that were shown that were determined, I think there's probably more, but the Dyna Blasters and Rigid Force Redux.
Yeah, they showed several games. They showed skiing. They showed, they didn't show cornhole, I don't think, which we'll get into. But
skiing we've seen before.
Sure.
But Dyna Blaster and Rigid Force Redux are not exclusive games. Not by any stretch of the imagination. I want to know what the state of the games that are being made for the Amico that are truly exclusive. I want to know what the state of those games is. It's interesting to lean on games that already exist for other platforms. Because if you didn't know this, Dyna Blaster is not an exclusive to Amico. As much as they love to say everything is an exclusive, you can go to the Dyna Blaster website and you can clearly see that they are throwing this game at literally everything.
App Store, Amazon, Google Play, Switch, Mac App Store, available on Windows, Xbox, and Steam, and Amico. So there's 9 ways you can play this game. There'll be 9 different platforms to get this game.
Yeah.
So that's not exclusive. The ones that are definitely will be exclusive, though, are the ones that certain German developers are doing from the Bavarian grant money we referenced about. Like they helped get these produced, like the skiing and Shark they showed there. So there are ones that are probably close to finish because they had money to work on those over like a year and a half ago. But you're right about the ones that were specific. So two things I'm going to talk about here real quick about what they didn't show. I wanted to see motion controls being shown on these games because that's one of the sort of the lean-ins on this is that we want to replace the Nintendo Wii. You want to be able to play cornhole. Like cornhole is going to be a packing game. Right. I want to see that functioning. I want to see the motion controls functioning for a game like that.
Yeah, we have yet to see any of the supposedly game-changing things you can do with this controller.
Yeah,
that makes certain games only playable with this controller.
Yeah, I didn't see any of the interactive light stuff to be like, oh, a game, whatever. We know that's going to be tacked on for maybe the Bomb Squad game, and they'll try to figure out. But I want to see the motion controls. That's a major component.
Sure.
Something like this. Didn't see that. And then the other thing I was going to say, based upon two games, there was two games clearly shot by a YouTuber with the controller in the shot at the same time you see the screen going on. So, you know, we brought up the thing called lag that the system had clearly on the Astro Smash video from months back, and then the Finnegan Fox one infamously, what was that, like 6 to 8 weeks ago, where people were trying to deny, but then Tommy even said he was trying to troll Ian and me by flipping the controller. So I wanted to see if there was lag still here, and boy, is there lag still on this controller. And if you frame step this, this is a 30 frames per second video. If you frame step this, you can see in two games. In Dyna Blaster, you can see it, and you can also see it in the Rigid Force Deluxe. In Dyna Blaster, it is clear as day that when the person moves, it's a delayed reaction. And most importantly, how you can tell something has lag. Well, what happens when your finger comes off the controller entirely, if you want to be technical? There's points in time when the finger comes off the controller, the character still walks down after the person's hand is off the D-pad. It is clear as day. It is not a conspiracy. Either you believe us or you think we're lying. That's what it comes down to. Or believe your own eyes when it comes down to it. There is still an issue with the lag when it comes to this controller. And on Rigid Force Deluxe, Ian was looking at it. I was looking at it. Ian, you were going to give the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the shooting on there. But what I was seeing when the finger... First of all, using the touchpad to shoot is going to be an awful experience. To use not using a face button, using the touchpad. When the thumb comes off of the basically, I guess it's a fire function. The finger comes off of it. It still fires for about 10 frames afterwards. Ian, you said on some games that though you're giving the benefit.
Some games when you fire, function. It fires off a whole salvo of bullets.
Sure.
A lot of top down shooters do it particularly.
But I also looked at the movement. Ian, if you want to look at it as well, I'll point out the movement as well, and I put together a little video for us to look at. There's part of the video where frame step it at like 4 seconds in when the ship goes to the top left of the screen, it kind of floats up to the top left of the screen. You can clearly see the user's thumb is on the bottom right pad. It's at about 4 to 5 seconds in on this video, and the ship just floats to the top. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm. I saw it earlier when you were.
I mean, yeah. It's plain as day. The ship floats up to the top left, and the person is not pushing to the top left at all. I mean, at all. It's clearly 8 to 10 frames behind. It's not matching up. The movement's not matching up. And you're saying, well, if you can't tell in fast motion, what's the big deal? You'll tell when you play the game.
Oh, sure. Playing shooters with any amount of lag is extremely difficult.
You can't do it. You have to be precise. So this goes back to the fact of they got to clean this up. I don't know if they can. If they haven't cleaned up by this point in time, and we are just over three months away from this being put into production to reach October, I don't know how you can show this, even for investors, if it's in this state. Obviously, shooting around it. I'm sure Tommy's not pleased with videos like this being put on YouTube. I'm sure if he had his druthers, he would say, I don't want to show this because this shows this in an unfinished state. And it is in an unfinished state. So that's all I'm going to say. I don't know if they have the manpower and the expertise in order to basically what they got to do is write their own proprietary. If you're talking to people and experts, people above my pay grade, you have to write your own proprietary sort of tech in order to have a controller like this, not have significant lag with the game console. Because what's happening here is you're running Android, out of the box Android,
right.
And you're running not just one OS, you're running two OSs communicating with each other. You're right. You have one on the console and one on the controller running independently. That forces more lag than you would want. Someone like Nintendo with like the Switch communicating, they're a company with the manpower and know-how in order to write their own code in order to minimize lag. This company obviously is not there. So I don't know if this is easily solved or not. They got 6 months to figure this out, to ship this, because in this state. If you think we're being harsh, if you think IGN or GameSpot gets a hold of a console with 10 frames of lag, they will rip it apart for a game that requires twitchy movement. They'll straight out say, these games will be unplayable. And that'll be the end of it. You won't get a second chance. Am I being crazy?
No.
I just want to make sure. Like, am I crazy when it comes to that? It's bad.
I mean, this is why... you know, pretty much anything dissenting or asking hard questions is removed from the Intellivision Amico Reddit.
I get more and more, not just insulted, I feel more and more bad. I don't feel bad for the people on YouTube who are ignoring these things for whatever reason, whether they think that staying in Tommy's good graces is a benefit to their career. It won't be. He'll toss you out as soon as he's done with you and doesn't have any use for you anymore. I feel bad for the people that honestly want to get a console and put down their pre-order money, that actually want something that's going to be working and it's going to be fun and it will not be abandoned within a year or two after it comes out. I don't want people to be taken for a ride to put their money in. And to be honest, and that's where I sort of turn back to. I feel bad for those people. Those people that aren't paying attention to any of this stuff. They're not realizing the state that this is in.
Sure.
They're not on social media. They're not following the 7 to 10 interviews that Tommy does per week on YouTube, and I might be undercounting that for some weeks. The people that are normal and balanced and aren't involved with this as a profession or as a hobby that just said, oh, I saw this in television thing. I had that back when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. I want to get the upgraded one. I think it might be fun. And they're going to get potentially a shit product. Those are the people I feel bad for. Those are the real losers when it comes down to this. The investors are going to lose as well, but that's a whole other conversation. And then the investors, some of them should know better, but that's a whole other conversation when it comes down to it. So, yeah. So if you want to play a Dynablaster or a Rigid Force Redux, go play it on a console or a platform where you will not be experiencing issues. And that'll definitely be in your hands sooner. You can get Rigid Force right now on Switch.
No need to wait. You can get it right now. If you really want to play Dynablaster, I mean, there's a billion Bomberman games out there. Dynablaster is literally just a Bomberman clone.
By the way, the third thing I forgot, the other thing I've yet to see is I've yet to see the co-op on all of these games. So they show skiing being demoed. What is the co-op on the skiing game that you can't experience elsewhere in a game like that? I haven't seen it yet.
Sure.
Can I take control of a abominable snowman and come after you, like in that old Microsoft free game you talk about, the free skiing game?
Ski free.
By the way, there's a lot of free skiing games out there, or cheap games that look great, by the way, that you can go get. For Rigid Force, unless it's two players simultaneous on the screen, which we haven't seen, what's the co-op going to be on that? Because these aren't exclusive games anymore. What are the exclusive features that we're going to get that's going to make this a mind-blowing $250 to $300 experience that you can't get somewhere else?
Love to spend $250 on a console so I can play the Hydrox version of Bomberman.
Hydrox Bomberman? Well, that's funny because Dynablaster was the European name back in the day, because I guess they couldn't use Bomberman because of they toned down the violence on it. But like, I think it's not a Konami project, so what's the point?
Right.
It's the Hydrox Bomberman. That's good, Ian. But Hydroxes to me were always better than Oreos. They were the OG. You disagree?
Point is made.
You can come after us for that, not anything else, not us inserting our politics.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, Ian. Every 4 or 5 months now, we're talking about, or 3 or 4 months, a Pawn Stars segment, the show we know and love, where a graded video game or sealed video games come up for sale. This is the third time in about a year we have seen this happen. So first, it was the Super Mario Brothers. It was the second print run version, sticker seal, where he wanted $1 million for it. Rich, the investor / collector, which was famously bought by a trio of folks, and we always said there's probably collusion between WADA and Heritage Auctions, and that probably was part to help jumpstart this. And then they had the three or four sealed, it was like the Parker Brothers Atari 2600 games, Frogger, Indiana Jones, and there was like one or two others at the top of my head, that there wasn't a sale completed. And that was the son on the show who said at the time that, well, this is kind of crazy right now with the prices. It could be a little out of control. I don't want to get into this. Well, that was thrown out the window in this latest segment with the Pawn Stars graded seal Mike Tyson's punch out. So in this segment, you had a collector come in who said that he mainly collected PS1 games but acquired this from the original owner, who was a regional manager at a Kmart. The sticker was still on it, and he comes in with a 9.4 graded sealed Mike Tyson's punch out, the original Nintendo game. And my overview before getting the details is that this is not the cautionary tale that the last Pawn Stars appearance was, where it's like, let's take a step back, let's be careful. Something happened in the past few months between this where it was all balls to the wall. This is definitely worth tens of thousands of dollars and everything's hot right now. And it was a very FOMO-driven segment. of Pawn Stars.
Yeah, it seemed like it, the tone was just very, very different.
We applauded the tone of the last one. We're like, they're being cautionary and being reasonable.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just the game, you know, sets because of the title, it set something off. But, yeah, they there was definitely more excitement, I think. And it seemed a little... I don't know, like I said, it was just weird to see the difference between the last segment and this segment.
It was more of a commercial than even the first segment with Super Mario Brothers.
Yes, it felt like a commercial.
So some of the quotes I got from our pal Chum, who was this the vendor behind the counter. While everyone was playing Super Mario and Donkey Kong, I was playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Not the nitpick, but no one was playing Donkey Kong on the NES. Not many people had that game. It was all about Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, everyone played Mike Tyson's
Punch-Out. Yeah, it's a very common game. Almost every kid that had an NES had it. They had a thing on the screen that said it sold 3 million. I don't know if they picked that from Wikipedia or not. I'm like, that's probably accurate. It was probably something like that.
Sure.
We're talking millions of kids had it. And Chum said, I know games are hot right now, especially from the early 90s. Everyone who was playing video games is at this point where they want to start collecting the stuff they grew up with. But that's, well, real quick, Ian, I was questioning the early 90s thing, and I couldn't wrap my mind around that, because early 90s, in your estimation, is not the hotness. It's after that, but...
No, I feel like that's already moved on a little bit. I feel like it's probably more like N64, GameCube. I feel
late
like...
Late 90s, early 2000s?
Late 90s, early 2000s is where we're at right now. That's because all of those people are now 20... I mean, if you...
They're where we were 10 years ago.
Yeah, they're between 25 and 30. That's what they grew up with. That's what they're buying.
Yeah, so that's weird. And this is why... The grading scene is always not about game collecting, because if they were really in on collecting what you grew up with, they would have bought these graded games, I don't know, 10 years ago, because right. That's when they grew up with it.
Sure.
In 2021, you're a little bit past the prime of the collecting scene with this. It doesn't match up. It never did. And that's what it comes down to, is that it's not game collecting anymore. It's something else.
Right.
It's a diversion, a subset of a subset.
It's investment collecting. I mean, the guy who had this couldn't even pretend to act like he knew anything about the game.
To his credit, he said he's into PS1 stuff. He's probably a little younger. He probably looked like he was in his early 30s.
Sure.
Maybe. But I left a comment on the channel about it's apropos that like Chum is like probably our age. He's probably like 40. He's like, character of the game, like Glassy Joe. Is that his name? And then the seller responds quizzically, I think so. So I just think it's really funny, or case in point, that a game worth, you're trying to get tens of thousands for, you don't know like almost anything about. You don't know the first iconic boxer of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Not even tens of thousands. Trying to get 100,000 for this.
So that's what, case in point, that it's not about the games. The game is inconsequential when it comes to seal collecting. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's a token. Who made the game's significance, by and large, the history of the game, how the game plays, some of these collectors would not be able to tell you.
Oh, sure.
They won't. They don't care. They just know, okay, it's hot, it's worth money, it's an investment, and that's it. That's where it begins and ends. And it's a shame. It's a shame because, again, you take sort of the entertainment and artistry out of it entirely. At least with, like, comic book collecting, that's part of it still. Like, the art's right there. The significance is there. But when it comes to these graded games, it's hollow. It's almost like you can do with any other object, like an NFT at that point.
You could replace these games with poker chips that have the letters A through Z on them, and if you told people that they were worth something, it could literally be anything. You could swap out anything.
That's what bothers me the most about this set of people that have come into this literally 2 years. People that before 2 years ago, a lot of them didn't know video game collecting was a thing to be concerned about. Or it wasn't worth their time. It literally wasn't, or else they would have got into it.
Right.
Inorganic versus organic growth. Video game collecting was organic. It happened slowly. It developed since really the 80s over time. This high-end graded game collecting has not been organic at all. It's been thrust upon and gamed. The system has been gamed through these Pawn Stars appearances and from three or four choice big articles. On like New York Times, and other sites, Kotaku, that really cast a super positive light on this to get people interested. And that's what's so bothersome and dangerous about this, to put a finer point on it.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. Let's see what else he said, Ian. Chum just throws out $100,000. It's not out of the question. Like, how does Chum know that? Not out of the question. Like, how can you cavalierly say that about it? I don't understand that. I just don't.
Yeah, it's weird. And like I said, that's the biggest change from, I think, the last time this was covered, was just the from cautionary to throw it to the wind. This, who knows what this is worth?
And Sean was a part of that last segment with the Sun. It was both, yes, of them that were there. That's what's so weird about it. So I don't believe in coincidences, Ian. And people say there's coincidences. I do and I don't. There was something weird that happened with the timing of this segment. If you look at the current Heritage Auctions games for sale, Ian, would you be shocked if I told you there were sealed Mike Tyson's punch-outs for sale?
Gasp.
Right now on Heritage Auctions?
Gasp.
You would be gasping.
Gasping.
So there's two. A game and item so rare that 100,000 easily, that there's two right now for sale at the same time. And there's been multiple sealed Mike Tyson's punch-outs for sale over the past year. And then, yes, some have gone. I think it was one for $50,000, yep, or so. There's two right now. One with 2 days left is a 9.0, is at 14 grand with 2 days left. And the other, a better condition one than this, is at a 9.6 with at $27,000. The cynic in me says that they probably timed this knowing that this episode was going to come out. The people at Heritage knew this. That's why this is so bothersome. Everyone talks to everyone for this.
Yeah, this is not a big scene. No. You could probably put the people who actually make moves in this, the people who are actively involved in this, you could probably fit them all in a fucking restaurant dining room.
Yeah, I think it's been accurate from what I've known that there's like online collecting groups for all these high-end collectors. It's probably not more than 200 people,
yeah.
250. These are not a lot of people. Again, if I would know from going to these conventions if there were a lot of people, they're not. At these conventions at like Too Many Games or Portland, they're not like all over the place. You can point out that's a sealed collector, that's an investor. You can point them out.
Sure.
They're not all over the place. So yeah, I'm not angry or set up about a segment like this. It's just not something that is good for these people in general. It's not good for someone looking to get into it, because for the people looking to get into it, you're already on the tail, could be on the tail end of this, over the, you know, the valuation of this. And then Dennis from Awada shows up as the expert for the third time, which is, again, he admits though that, hey, yeah, I, you know, we graded this when it came through. We graded this collection of games from this guy. And again, it's highly unethical to say things like, in quotes, Ian, this grading makes it really desirable for collectors. And also saying, I would be very comfortable valuing it at the 70 to 80,000 range. It is extremely unethical for the person running the grading company to say these things. He should have no involvement at all in trying to value an item.
Agreed.
Because he's tied up in that market. He makes money because people think it's worth this amount of money.
Yes. Agreed.
Other experts sometimes don't say that. They'll just say, okay, yeah, I verified it. This is a real historical document. I don't know what it's worth, but it's real. And then they get out. Like, that's... But then that wouldn't make the story.
Right. Use my service and you can get lots of money.
Potentially, right? But then it could be weird to say, oh, yeah, no, it's authentic because my company graded it. Here, bye. Like, that's what it should be.
Yeah.
It should be a third... It should be, in theory, an impartial third party. But is there someone impartial at this point? It's either someone that says pie in the sky or someone like me that says you're crazy. Well, would there be someone impartial?
It just goes back to what we said earlier. It's not big enough.
It's not big enough to have an outsider looking in and be like, okay, what's really going on? It's not been around for 10, 20, 30 years to, right, say, historically, this is what happens with this. We don't know. As I look at my Mike Tyson's punch-out standee in the corner. Hey, Mike, what do you think about all this? Your game being sold for tens of thousands. Did you get any from Nintendo laying around to get graded, Mike? Anything going on?
Muting my phone.
Oh.
It was doing too much buzzing on my thigh.
But this will be the reality going forward. This is going to show up now on Pawn Stars, this stuff, the same way you get like high, you know, high-end art pieces showing up. It's going to be probably something like this. But yeah, caution everyone, caution. Caution, caution, caution. But then again, the people that can throw tens of thousands of dollars around have it to lose probably. They probably to take that sort of big of a risk. It's a fun thing. It's a Nintendo game. I remember that. I'm going to spend $50,000 on one and maybe I'll make money on it. That's what it is. It's a fun hobby.
Sure.
Anything else to add?
No.
Oh, okay. I feel like I dominated that segment with my spiel.
It's just, it's painful.
It always painful to you? So listen to me or just watching the clip?
No, just the clip and yeah, I don't know.
I put a bow on it.
I'm in a mood this week.
You are in a mood.
Yeah. Well, all right, moving on. Outriders, it will permanently brand cheaters once the game is released in full, which I believe is happening very shortly. So basically, Outriders is a new game from Square Enix. It looks to be very similar to like a Borderlands style game. You can squad up with your friends and go and get weapons and loot and stuff like that in a kind of an open world environment with a quest structure.
Oh, okay.
I like games like that. But the news is that Outriders will permanently brand players who cheat with a shameful on-screen watermark, is what this article from PC Gamer says. Basically, if you are a cheater, you will it's a discreet but visible watermark that will never go away. So people will always know if they want to check that you were a cheater. You can't. This effectively stops you from ever being able to brag about your builds, your characters, anything that you've put time into in the game. Even if you stop cheating. So you can't do it once. Not once. It will never, ever go away. And I kind of like this zero tolerance policy for cheating in games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially with online games. This isn't even a versus one, although who knows, there might be some PvP that I'm unaware of. But yeah, you want everyone to be on the same page. And as they mentioned in this article, it's true. Yeah, people who cheat their way to these crazy builds, it definitely isn't fun for online players to have someone drop in and then go, you know, laser blast or nuke, all the enemies in a, you know, in a map or in a level, and, you know, you don't do anything. So this also prevents you from being able to do normal matchmaking.
Okay.
And you will not be able to matchmake with legit players. You will have to play with other people who have cheated, which means that getting a game going can take forever.
So I'm actually looking at this. So this is kind of like a Destiny sort of game.
It looks like a Destiny
RPG elements.
I think it looks closer to Borderlands to me, but okay. Yeah, something along those lines.
Never got into those type of games. So this, actually looking at it, this officially comes out, I guess, April 1st. So before we recorded this, it comes out after we record this segment. So I like that they're letting people know up front before it's out everywhere. I guess it's in beta release right now that this is coming.
Yeah, I think it was like an open beta or something like that. Basically, they said, and they put that watermark on cheaters from the beta as well.
Oh, so people were already cheating in the beta? Holy shit.
But they are giving out, there's a loophole out. Basically, you have to delete everything from your profile. You have to delete all the characters, all the items that you would have gotten during the beta. So basically, your work in the beta will not transfer over to the main game. People who played in the open beta, they'll be able to take their items and stuff with them into the main game when it launches.
That boggles my mind that people will be cheating in an open beta. Like that, that's
well,
so weird.
As they say...
It's weird in general, but in an open beta, people want to cheat.
Yeah,
just to figure out the game and see if it works or not properly, you know, and test it, feel for it.
They address this. People can fly also issued a warning to beta cheaters who'd like to get back on their good side before the full game launches. If you cheated during the demo just to try it out but wish to get into the main game unbranded, you must delete all characters and items on your entire account in order to wipe the slate clean. I think that's fair, and I think they're really giving the benefit of the doubt here, but I think if you were going to cheat during the beta would be maybe an acceptable place to do it. If you want to see how the game plays at a higher level or something, fine. Maybe they're not trying to get something over on them.
They want to get it more advanced, get the items.
They want
quicker
to see what the game looks like at a later state. Okay, fine. I still think people are just cheating to cheat.
Of course. So according to them, it's 200 cheaters identified out of 2 million total. That's 0.01% with Pat Math there. And then they're confident it won't grow by much when Outriders launches. And then this is how they define cheating. Intentionally running the game on PC without easy anti-cheat, EAC, because it's the proprietary anti-cheat, which comes probably bundled with it. Modifying game files to enhance a character, I see. Like, you go into the configuration, give yourself stuff. Externally modifying game time to reduce time-dependent features such as vendors and challenges. Oh, that's interesting. Using a trainer program or similar to gain advantage within the game. And then using gameplay-altering programs such as aimbots or wall hacks.
Yeah, this is great. I want to see more games do it. The idea of cheater hells has been done before. That's what they called in this article, when cheaters can only match up with other cheaters. And there are other games that do it. Apex Legends famously does it. I think we maybe even discussed it briefly on the podcast. I think one of the Call of Duties, one of the more modern Call of Duties, does it. So basically, if you cheat, well, your punishment is you have to deal with people just like you. And I think that's very just and appropriate.
So again, if you say, well, you know, you're not, this isn't player versus player, it's not a big deal, you're still altering the game experience and making it weird, and it's not the way the game was intended to be played to get that much of a cheat. Someone had an example in the article here, this author, about when they were playing, they were playing a game, what happened? Playing Borderlands. I had a similar experience in Borderlands when a rando player joined my game, dropped a crazy modded laser rifle that dealt a billion damage, and then left my life forever. The laser rifle totally broke the game, but whatever, I had fun. So someone gave him this awesome, called him the laser rifle angel, dropped the weapon, but then the game is basically cheated at that point.
Right.
You can just blow through everyone. And that's the point. You're upsetting the balance of the game, and you're ruining the entire experience. And people might not want to play it anymore. Maybe the fun of it is having your squad mates slowly level up and get through this. But now you got people coming in that are beasts. That makes everything simple. Why am I even playing the game? There's no challenge anymore.
Sure.
That's really the point. But it's interesting, now we're in that point where you have these totally co-op games where you got to worry about it as well. Because I wouldn't have thought about that. I wouldn't have thought about cheating in a game. I always thought about cheating just player versus player.
Right.
To get an advantage. All right, anything else to add here?
No.
You're going to pick up Outriders?
I mean, I wasn't really aware of it until this article came out. And no, I'll probably be well occupied with Monster Hunter for a long time. But I do like games like these, what they call looter shooters. I like the idea.
Looter shooters?
Looter shooters.
We got boomer shooters and looter shooters.
I like the idea of looter shooters. I have dabbled in them before. I've played a little Destiny. I played a bunch of the First Division. I played a lot of Borderlands 1 and a little bit of 2. I like the idea. It's fun.
All right, Ian, on the CU podcast, we love celebrating anniversaries of game consoles and retro games. Fives and zeros, that's our mark. We don't do 71, we don't do 47, we don't do 12. But we do the 10th anniversary, and we just passed the 10th anniversary of the release of the Nintendo 3DS handheld, and we just passed last week the 20th anniversary of the GBA.
Yeah, thank goodness for these zeros and fives coming up appropriately when we need them so that we have topics to discuss.
Why do you stop pulling the curtain back, Ian?
The curtain's back. It's 7 years in. On this day, 10 years ago, the Nintendo 3DS was released in North America. That was March 27th, so it was Sunday. The 3DS is probably, it's tough, one of my favorite portable systems. Definitely, I think, one of the best ones Nintendo put out. I know not everyone agrees with that, but I really enjoyed it. What I liked about the 3DS was that...
What I like about 3DS?
I feel like a lot of Nintendo's games that were released on the 3DS were... they felt refined. They had a whole generation with the original DS to kind of test the waters when it came to dual screen games and how to get them to, you know, play the best.
Sure.
So I feel like, you know, after 10, you know, it's not 10 years, but after that lead up period, we were definitely getting better games that knew how to do more with the touch screens. The 3DS also introduced a lot of social features that I liked that the DS was missing, and that was fun. It was one of the first Nintendo consoles to have, like, the you know, you could see what friends were online and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, it's a fully Wi-Fi enabled handheld. Yes. That's important. Yeah.
Yes, fully Wi-Fi enabled. You could play online. You could play with other people. You know, robust eShops. But my favorite thing about the 3DS was the Street Pass function, which I mourn the loss of in the Switch all the time. Street Pass was a lot of fun with 3DS. Basically, you could take your 3DS and at any time you could sleep it. Close it back up and put it in your pocket. Anytime you passed someone who also had a Nintendo 3DS in their pocket that was closed up, you would exchange data in the form of your Mii character, a little saying. It would show you in your costume and
where you were from.
And they did a lot of neat stuff with that. You could obviously in the Mii Friends Plaza, which was where you could look at all the different people you've met. You could see the quote that they attached to their character. But Nintendo did a really cool thing, and they used all these people that you collected to play a series of mini games. There was a flower shop one. There was a lot of them. I didn't even play, I think, the third set. There was a fishing one. There was RPG.
The adventure RPG, the default one.
Adventure RPG, exploring a haunted house. There was all sorts of cool mini games, and basically you needed these stock of characters to do things in the game or to act as party members. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fun, really unique idea that I thought for sure Nintendo...
Find Me, that was the name of it. Find Me,
that's one of them. Yeah,
that was the one that came with it originally.
But I think I thought for certain Nintendo was never ever going to let that idea go, because everyone loved it. And
people go to conventions and be on their 3DS or checking, oh, who did you street pass with? It was a thing. It was a phenomenon, like a little phenomenon.
By adding this in, I think sometimes people think about playing games on a port. Like, it's big in Japan, but I think sometimes here people think about getting, you know, at a convention, playing games on portables, getting four people together to network a game like Mario Kart or something might be too much hassle or more hassle than it's worth. But if you've got these simple games installed on the system that you can play at any time just by passing people, you ensure that people are taking these systems to conventions. Therefore, stuff like Smash on the 3DS, Mario Kart on the 3DS, people did actually gather and play these because they were already keeping these their systems on and out and around to collect these street passes. It really, I think, it's hard. I'm having a tough time finding the exact words, but it really...
It's communal?
Yes, it really increased the communal aspect of the 3DS, and I liked that, and they had something going. There was all sorts of 3DS meetups, not even just at conventions, but they would do them at GameStops and at, you know, sandwich shops and things like that. And it's gone now. They took it off the Switch. I mean, the Switch isn't as portable as the 3DS, but they just completely eliminated it. And I struggle all the time to figure out why they got rid of it. I have no idea. It was such a unique and cool idea.
Yeah. It was a moment in time. We're talking about the time before smartphones blew up. Smartphones were still new. They weren't all super affordable yet. I'd say it wasn't until like 2013, a couple years later, where more and more people getting smartphones. 12, definitely 13. So it was a weird moment in time that maybe you couldn't replicate because smartphones weren't a thing. This is like social media still is in its infancy, and people are still locked to phones that don't have this stuff yet. So this is like the bridge, maybe. And maybe that's why. And again, this is in a time where Nintendo had never done an app. 10 years ago, Nintendo were never going to do an app. They weren't going to do an app until even like, well, it's 5, 6 years ago. We're not doing an app. Then the past few years, we're doing apps, finally. So it's a weird time. But no, going back to the communal nature, I mean, Nintendo having their spot at Comic-Con over here every year, they always had like the little meetup area.
Yeah.
And things like that. When I go to conventions, I brought my 3DS, and I wanted to see who I did the Street Pass with. And I was excited. You know, I think I finally got, after doing, you know, we're talking dozens of conventions, I think I got everyone from every state.
Nice, yeah.
I was like, that's really cool.
That is fun to, fun to do. I think I got everyone from every state as well.
It's like a weird feeling, like, wow, we're all connected in a weird way. And it's just people having them in their bags. I would have mine like in my bag, unopened, and just see who you connect with. And the battery life was good on those, if I remember.
Oh, no. That's one thing I would definitely say. The battery life was not good on the 3DS. No.
Having it closed?
None of them. Especially closed. No, it just drains like crazy.
I don't remember having to charge it during the day at a convention.
I mean, you could probably get through a day. I'm just saying, compared to other battery lives, the 3DS battery life was not good.
Oh, okay.
And it drained far more energy than it probably should have in sleep mode.
Okay. I don't remember having a problem at conventions.
No, I mean, it was workable. Obviously, it was workable. Otherwise, people wouldn't do it. I'm just saying, don't...
1,300 mAh battery. I don't know how long that is. But okay. That aside, I had fun with it at conventions. But yes, I mainly used it for Mii Pass and for the Find Mii games and for like the puzzle pieces you unlocked and things like that.
Interestingly, the 3DS saw a number of ports on it, just like the... Game Boy Advance did. When we talked about the Game Boy Advance's anniversary, we talked about how, you know, it got the ports of the different Mario games and Zelda and stuff like that. Same thing happened with the 3DS. You got great ports of Ocarina of Time. You got really good ports of Majora's Mask. And you got new entries in those series as well. You didn't get a new Mario on the Game Boy Advance, but you did on the 3DS. You got Super Mario 3D Land, which was kind of like the predecessor to Super Mario 3D World. I love those games. I love the way they look. It's hard for me to describe them, but they are 3D Mario games that play like 2D Mario games. I love the level design in those games. Zelda Link Between Worlds, I never played it. Vani did. She loved it, 100% of it. Supposed to be a fantastic game. I did kind of like... The 3DS was nice. One of the nice things about having the two different systems, a handheld version and a handheld system and a console, was Nintendo definitely felt like they were willing to experiment with older styles a little bit more. Okay. I don't know that we'll necessarily get as much of that. I mean, you did. You got a remake of Link's Awakening, but Link Between Worlds plays like an old-school Zelda game. It's interesting. I don't think you would have gotten that something like that on the Switch.
So, the biggest seller... with almost 19 million was Mario Kart 7, which is an excellent game. Mario Kart 7 was fun. I had fun playing that. Mario Kart 7. Let's see. You got Pokemon in 2, 3, and 4th place. What a shock. New Super Mario Bros. 2 is 5th. Animal Crossing, New Leaf is 6th. Uh-oh.
Probably my favorite version of Animal... Wild World, but I also like New Leaf.
So Super Mario 3D Land is 7th. Super Smash Bros. For Nintendo 3DS is 8th. Pokemon, another Pokemon is 9, Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. A game called Yo-Kai Watch 2 is 10th. Role-playing game. Tamagotchi Life is 11. Luigi's Mansion. So mostly first party. Good old Nintendogs and Cats is 14. Where's the Switch Nintendogs and Cats? Give me the Switch Cats. And then Monster Hunter is 15th and 16th. So definitely a different style, you know, of console in terms of the games. It's obviously... Pokemon and Nintendo first party heavy, but there's other ones that sneak into here as well when you look at it, but not a lot of third party stuff on here that you consider like fully third party. It's mostly Nintendo published stuff. There's some Capcom starting in here with Monster Hunter, but yeah, it's Nintendo handheld.
Capcom, Atlas, and Nintendo, I think, were probably the biggest publishers on that system. Yeah. One thing I would say, I feel like you can't talk about the 3DS without mentioning how many iterations of that hardware we got. We got the 3DS, we got the 2DS, you got the...
3DS XL.
The 3DS XL. Then you got the new 3DS XL.
And the new 3DS.
The new 3DS.
It's 5.
And you got the new 2DS XL.
There's a 2DS XL?
There's a new 2DS XL.
So there's a giant tablet one?
No, it folds. It just it's a clamshell. It just gets rid of
so
the
So there's
3D
six
screen.
Of them.
There's six different...
Holy shit. Six, we got the order wrong probably, but there's six of them.
Yeah, there's six different variations of this that you can buy, not to mention all the different colors in all the different special editions.
Do I have 3DS XL or 3DS? I forget which one I have.
I think you have a 3DS because you have that purple one, right?
I sold the purple one. I had the blue one. I had a purple one and I sold it. It was an extra one. The purple one was like the uncommon color, I think.
So, anyways, yeah. A lot of different additions to this hardware. It was one of the things that kind of annoyed me about it. I was annoyed at first when it released and it did not have a second analog stick. I felt like that was a real missed opportunity. And as a person who plays a lot of Monster Hunter, that was what sold me on the new 3DS, was the second analog stick that you could use to control camera. Nintendo weirdly... that second analog stick should have been on there from day one. And I think you would have seen a lot of a lot of interesting games if it was always on the system as opposed to potentially an add-on.
So this was weird. So I don't fault them here, though, at least for the on the new one. So according to this, the new 3DS XL came out before the regular new 3DS. So you got the bigger one. They didn't try to slow walk you. You didn't get the new 3DS before the XL.
In Japan, they were released at the same time. In the U.S., the XL was released. The new 3DS XL was the only one that was available regularly at retail. There was three or four versions of the new 3DS, but those were all released as special editions here.
So at least they did that. They didn't slow walk you and said, okay, well, we'll come out. I mean, that's a positive. They didn't try to get you to buy it four times.
No, I guess, and I think people knew about it, but it was also a pain because the new 3DS is really, in my opinion, the perfect size. It's in between the XL and the standard. It's a really good size, and they made that very difficult to get.
Yeah, I don't think the XL was necessary. I don't think when I played the 3DS, I had an issue with it. Besides it not having the analog, the second analog.
Over time, I realized that I definitely I specifically waited for the new 3DS regular size to get released here to pick one up because I realized I did not like the XL.
It's just too big.
It's too big. Yeah, holding a clamshell thing like that with a hinge is too big.
Yeah,
like trying to lean back and like it feels.
Yeah,
weird.
I never had an issue with the original DS. The original DS was perfect to me. The size of it, I didn't have an issue with that. So anyway, that's interesting. And then plus, most importantly, or one of the things about the 3DS. Is that the 3DS helped Nintendo get through a really rough patch in its history.
Yes. Nintendo's handhelds are always saving it during rough patches, and the Wii U was just about the roughest patch Nintendo ever had with a home console.
Of course, we always talk about the naysayers, the Nintendo doomsayers around, we'll just say, 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, like, oh, Nintendo is doomed. Look what's happened with the Wii U. It's like, do you know how many handheld units they're pushing out? Nintendo, like, they're fine. They're still in the black here. So they sold. Okay, how many do they sell here? Hopefully, it doesn't break it up. Hopefully, it's just one number of sold here. All models combined as of September 2020, just under 76 million. 76 million handhelds, and that's like a 9-year span. That's nuts. That's nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And now the Switch has replaced it. Because they're going to blow past now, 76 and go, if they haven't already, I forget, and go up to, and hit the Wii numbers potentially. 76 million. So yeah, they lost money on the Wii U likely. They probably lost money or didn't make much of a profit. Yeah, that was a failure. Selling only, 11 million or so. But 76 million handhelds and iterative versions that cost you less R&D along the way.
Yeah.
It's, just make it throw a bigger screen on it, Ian. Hey, Ian, put another thumb pad on there. And there you go. That's our new system. People will rebuy it. And they did by tens of millions. It's nuts. Six different versions? That's insane. That's the record. I think they'll get broken.
Yeah.
You're not counting the regular DS because that's a different platform. The DS only had two.
DSi, and DSi XL.
Yeah, I always forget about the DSi thing.
No, Nintendo loves to iterate their handhelds.
The DSi sort of was like, fading out by that point. But anyway. Oh, well, happy birthday. Happy 10th. Let's see, for a 10th, what should we do? Bowling alley birthday party for 10 years?
Yeah, that's a bowling.
Is that too old for Chuck E. Cheese? You can still go to Chuck E. Cheese.
It's definitely still Chuck E. Cheese.
All right, we'll take it to Chuck E. Cheese. Are they still around anymore?
In some way, shape, or form.
All right. Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. Go pay. Get.
That's not what it is, Ian.
It is.
You're helping support us. Helping keep the lights on at Castle Country and Castle Ferguson. You get the weekly writing that Ian does. He's working on one today. You get the monthly hangout. You get the full video podcast uninterrupted with all our squabbling that we leave off of YouTube there usually and all our nice segues. And then you also get a poll topic each week. And this week, there's a couple of choices. In second place, it took a hit this week. And this is one that I think would be good for us to talk about at some point. That's why it's staying on. Do big video game releases get too much hype? 18%. And in first place, Ian, exclusive games from poor 90s consoles that deserve better. And when we say poor, we mean those underselling your weird-ass consoles like CDI, 3DO, Jaguar, maybe Virtual Boy if you want to throw them. Like, we'll just stick to those ones off the beaten track there.
So this one is a little bit tougher for me, but I did come up with a few, and they're actually on the Jaguar.
Okay.
For me, it would probably be Tempest 2000,
okay,
which is a fantastic game. Plays great. Was one of the first like games to really, I think, go for that over-the-top like kind of trippy visual style. Like Rez or something like that. It's a Jeff Minter game, if I'm not mistaken. That's Jeff Minter. And he does lots of stuff like that. A lot of fun. Very cool. The other one, I think the big one, the game that everyone wants to play when they think about the Jaguar, is Alien vs. Predator. It was the first, almost positive, the yes. first Alien vs. Predator video game. And it never got put on any other system. It was truly the exclusive that kind of made you kind of sit up and take notice of it. You could play as the alien, you could play as the predator, you could play as a space marine. There were different levels for each main character. And that was that was one of the only games when I was a kid that really made me want to play play a Jaguar, because I was obsessed with Alien and Predator growing
up. Okay, his first console, and the arcade one came out earlier that year.
Oh, okay.
If you count that. Okay. It was the same year.
Sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, those are really good ones. I was also wondering, do you think does the 32X count? I think it does, because those games are stuck. I mean, it's a failure, and those games are stuck on there.
A lot of those are ports, though, or different versions. Okay, well, let me hear what you have. What do you got?
For that, I have Calibri, which is an interesting, like, hummingbird-type shooter.
Huh. Okay.
And I think it's Tempo 2 as the one that is exclusive to the 32X.
Let me look up Calibri. I never heard of that.
Oh, Calibri's really cool looking.
No ad here.
Really interesting art, too.
That was never released anywhere else.
No, that's 32X only. And Tempo 2,
You're a little hummingbird?
Yeah.
That's adorable. I just saw a hummingbird outside my place yesterday. The two whizzed by my head within like 2 feet. I guess they don't care. Like other birds, they went zoom, zoom. I was like, what the hell? Hummingbirds are hanging out. They were pals.
And so Tempo 2 would be the other one.
Oh my God, this looks incredible.
It's a really nice looking game.
It's better than the fish shooter on TurboGrafx. That's for sure. Now I need a hummingbird shooter. Sequel. I know it's that dangerous out there, Ian.
Yeah.
In Hummingbird Land. You got to shoot dragonflies and other little guys. That's adorable. So Alien vs. Predator was cool at the time because I don't know at that point in time if everyone was aware of the arcade game, but it was like they were trying to do that movie forever, Alien vs. Predator. That's when the talk was heating up.
The comics had just come out.
Yeah, so that was the time for it, like the mid-90s. And I remember seeing it played. My friend Ryan, Rich Kid, had the Jaguar. He always had the Sega CD first, and he had the Jaguar. And I remember I don't know if he let me play it, but I was looking like, that's impressive. But there wasn't a lot of impressive games in the Jaguar that you couldn't pull off on other consoles. But that was impressive at the time for 94
right.
on a console.
I did do a lot of looking at 3DO stuff. I'm not particularly familiar with the 3DO, especially its exclusives, but I do think it's worth pointing out that it did have that really good version of Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. Super Street Fighter 2 was available on other systems, but I believe, at least at that point in time, Super Turbo was only available on the 3DO. So those would be my picks.
At the time, it didn't come out anywhere else? Super Street Fighter 2?
Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo did not.
Oh, Turbo.
Yes.
Interesting. That could be a... Oh, that's... So, not Super. Was it on the PlayStation?
I mean, that would have been after the fact, but I don't even think Super... I don't think Super Turbo got a release until the PS2 collection.
Here's a problem with the 3DO. There's so many games on it that were just like computer games or available elsewhere. I mean, you look at some of this stuff, you really got to really sink into this. They had there's Dungeons and Dragons games, it looked like.
Super Turbo was on PS1 and Saturn in the collection pack.
It was. So I did get its time. Alone in the Dark games. Cannon Fodder, that was on other things, wasn't it? A Corpse Killer obviously was. A Crime Patrol. There's not a lot on here. You gotta like dig down. Like the Demolition Man. Then once you dig down, is this stuff actually good? The thing about the 3DO, I think, unlike the Jaguar, everyone knows about Alien vs. Predator and Tempest 2000. They've heard of it. I can't think of a game that everyone brings up. Oh, that's the 3DO game you got to play. I can't.
No, because all of the big ones eventually got released on other systems. I'm looking at some games. There's one called Escape from Monster Manor.
Okay.
A Halloween themed FPS by EA, I guess. Lucian's Quest, a JRPG. There's... Killing Time, another first person shooter, but I felt like. No, I guess not. I thought Killing Time got released elsewhere.
People try to argue that Road Rash one, but Road Rash was released everywhere. Maybe not a specific one, but something it's close enough, you know, that Road Rash versus, you know, ones from the time. Yeah, that looks not that different than the Super Nintendo one when you look at that Road Rash. And it was also released on was it the PC and other Genesis. There was a Road Rash. So, yeah, that was everywhere. It was on Saturn. So you can't even say Road Rash. That would have been one. Like, okay, if Road Rash was on there, that's an interesting one. Yeah, Cannon Fodder was everywhere. I was going to say maybe that one for a weird one. Yeah, you're running out there. CDI is probably even worse for a game that's probably worthy to... Yeah, you originally had, like, CDI.
Included it in the list of systems we could call from, but I don't know anything about the CDI.
Oh, I didn't know Sewer Shark was in the 3D. I'm looking at the list. I had no idea. So they got a lot of those... Slammin' Jam 95 from Left Field Productions on the 3DO. Was that on anything else? It was just on 3DO. Well, check out Slammin' Jam 95 to see if that's worthy. Something tells me it's not, or we would have heard of it beforehand. What about Virtual Boy?
I actually liked... the thing about Virtual Boy is I think there's actually like good games on Virtual Boy. The system itself is just not...
It's miserable.
Not great. The Wario game I've played is
everyone
fun.
Says the Wario game is a legitimately good game. That should have been like...
Yes, yeah. It is. It's legitimately good.
Wario Land.
And I also liked Mario Crash. Honestly, I thought Mario Crash was pretty fun.
Oh, Clash?
Clash. Yes, thought it was Crash. Mario Clash I enjoyed. I always wanted to play Jack Brothers. Jack Brothers looks interesting. I remember playing Red Alert on the demo machine, or Red Alarm on the demo machine, and enjoying it. I don't know if I would still necessarily enjoy it. But I've had fun with the Virtual Boy games that I have played. It's not... the games, it's the system.
Yeah, it's that red. Looking at screenshots, I'm getting a headache of that. How was the golf game on that? You're the golf guy. Was the golf game all right?
I would love to play. That's one I've actually not played. That would be fun.
Looks like Teeny Soft did that one. So they did other golf games. I believe they did the N64 games.
I was going to say, I think they did YLI.
Yeah. So that's always an interesting one to me. So CDI... I'll look at, for you guys out there, I'll look at like best selling or CDI games game library. I'll be shocked if we find something that's even arguable that said, oh, that could have been on another system. I mean, they had 196 games in the CDI. Seventh Guest, that came out everywhere, obviously.
Yep.
Like, what the hell is exclusive on here? I'm looking at these developers. There's an Alice in Wonderland game. Really? Alice in Wonderland, did it just come out there? There's not even an article in Wikipedia for it. I can't even look into it. There was an Axis and Allies game that came out everywhere. There's a Beauty and the Beast. They did like one, not even Disney games. They did like the one-off generic versions.
Oh, wow.
There was a Bears game here. There was a Caesar's World of Gambling. Something tells me that's not gonna be something that we would be dying to see on another console. The Crime Patrol games, those were on other systems, weren't they? The shooters?
I believe so.
Amiga-based hardware, platforms. Yeah, that was everywhere. Windows, DVD, Mac, Windows. Yeah, that's not one. Family games. Flashback was everywhere. There was a Flintstones and Jetsons Time Warp game. That could be interesting if that didn't come anywhere. But Time Warp, what was the Super Nintendo Jetsons? Was that Time Warp? I'm trying to confuse it. I look up at the book. What was what? Wait a minute, what the fuck? There was a Google 13 CDI game? What? No, there wasn't. I would own it. What? Is that real?
The Jetsons on Super Nintendo is Invasion of the Planet Pirates.
But is there really a Google 13 CDI game? This is on the list. Is that for real? There's no way.
Probably.
No way that would come out in North America. Here. Let's see. Was it big in Japan, the CDI? That I find that hard to believe. I got to investigate that now. Gogo 13 CDI game. Come on. Trust me, Ian, I'm a nut when it comes to this stuff. It's a super rare CDI game. Great, now I got to buy it. Great, thanks so much. I never knew about this. Are you kidding me? It's super rare. Did it come out? Oh, there's a picture of it.
Holy shit. Okay. Thanks, everyone. I'll be spending $1,000 on a Google 13 game I didn't know existed until now. Are you for real? Okay. Time for me to search that. Are there any other systems we missed out on from the 90s?
Nothing that I could, like...
Hyperzone, was that 90s? I don't know.
Nothing that I could pick something from, no.
I'm going to be obsessed about this Google 13 game.
But there are, yeah, there's always been a couple of Jaguar games and a few 32X games that I would have liked to have played.
Well, let us know in the comments what we missed out on for one of those weird-ass consoles.
I'm sure we missed something.
Something in the 32X. How about, was a Spider-Man game good in the 32X? Well, Web of Fire, was that?
From what I've read, no, but I've never played it.
From what you read, no?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Ian, we got voicemails.
Oh, boy, we do. Let's do some of those.
Go to anchor.fm/TheCU Podcast. Don't be too excited, Ian, over that. And you can leave us a voicemail. Try to keep it short and sweet, you know, 15, 20 seconds. Get in, you get out. You get on with your life, just like us. This first one's from Michael. Mike from New Jersey, it says. Well, a lot of Jersey guys, I like it.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Michael from New Jersey. Do you think open world mechanics get shoehorned into some games that should be just simple fun? A couple of examples I can think of are Burnout Paradise and the later SSX games. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
So there's open world in a snowboarding game?
Yeah, Steep does it. SSX 3 kind of does it.
What, do you go for drinks up in the cabin?
Different branching paths, find different... It's just... it's interesting. So I do think open world games... I think open world mechanics are overused. I would much rather have... But my problem is I don't like that all action games these days seem to be turned into open world games or games with open world elements. I would much rather have a tight, crafted, level-based single-player experience than something open world. Because when you get an open world game, there's always parts that have nothing to do in them. It's the old saying, it's a pool that is, you know, a mile wide but an inch deep. There's lots to walk around and see and try to find, but there's just not a whole lot to do with it. And I get real bored with open world games. I can't focus. I get off the beaten path, and I just don't like them. It's funny that you mentioned Burnout Paradise and the later SSX games, because I actually love Burnout Paradise, and SSX 3 is my favorite of the SSX series. Burnout Paradise, you can sometimes, it can be a pain in the ass driving from spot to spot sometimes, but I really enjoyed just exploring the Burnout Paradise world, you know, breaking all of the billboards, you know, doing all that small side goal stuff that was available specifically because of the open world. But I know that's a controversial opinion. SSX 3, I think, it's one of my favorite games ever, and I really like it. I thought it was fun to kind of start at the top of a mountain and choose your path down the mountain and hit up some events on the way and stuff like that. They also allowed you to an event, you could fast travel to those events to replay them. So it's not like you have to, you know, spend 5 minutes going from place to place.
This is from Hunter.
Hey, Hunter from Ohio. I'm curious what your guys' favorite album
covers. I think he said album covers. Favorite album covers?
Album covers.
What one was the Beatles were murdering babies? The one that's rare. Remember that one? They're dolls. They're all bloodied up.
I think I don't know.
I have to think about album covers.
I'd have
covers.
To think about album
usually
covers.
Think about album covers, to be honest.
Call back and leave that message again clearly to make sure that that's what we thought you were saying, and I'll have something ready next time.
This is from Brad.
Hey guys, this is Brad from Muskegon, Michigan. My question is more for Pat. I know you've been saying you've been working on Nintendo 64 book. What is your plans, I guess, beyond that? Are you planning on doing maybe GameCube or mobile, maybe doing the
mobile
Game Boy games, reviewing those? Just wanted to get an idea of what your plans are after the Nintendo 64 book.
He wants to cut me off with the pass. I don't know. I don't like thinking about the next book afterwards. I struggled whether or not to do N64 or Game Boy.
and decide on N64 because I am still unsure about there being a viable market for a Game Boy book. There might be, but I know there definitely is one for the N64 that's probably bigger. So I decided to do that, which I now regret because it's probably the hardest console to do a book about due to the tough emulation involved and other factors. I don't know. If I do another book, I don't know. It might be more logical to do the GameCube. It'll be easier than doing the N64 book. The emulation is actually a lot better. But Game Boy is interesting, and it goes back to the more retro thing that I like. Like I don't know a huge amount about the N64. I'm learning as the writers are doing it, and I'm learning about some of these games. But Game Boy would be nice to go back to that. But again, I don't know. We'll see. It would just be Game Boy Black and White, though. It wouldn't be both. It'd be too big of a book to do Game Boy and Game Boy Color. Maybe I can rope Ian in and do some Game Boy reviews if I do Game Boy.
Maybe.
Get you and your crowd, you and your brethren.
Maybe.
To do that.
Oh, by the way, because I don't like to not answer a question that was asked, I have come up with some album covers. 36 Seasons by Ghostface Killah is a great album cover, and I like all the album art for Health albums.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Two consoles too late here. Couple quick questions. Ian, what is up with uncured pepperoni and buffalo? And Pat, what is your camera setup for Flea Market Madness? Love the show.
Uncured pepperoni is a thing?
So, yes, very common. Uncured pepperoni, like if you go and buy like those little cheese and cracker plates, it's almost always uncured pepperoni.
Oh, is it?
So, uncured pepperoni. Buffalo pizza, the thing that really differentiates buffalo pizza from other places is the almost exclusive use of what's known as cup and char pepperoni. Cup and char pepperoni is pepperoni that I believe it's the casing or the collagen on the outside of the pepperoni. When it cooks, it shrinks on the outside so it kind of cups, and then it gets really crispy on the edges.
Okay.
And then I don't know if this is what he's referencing, but there was during the lockdown there was a cup pepperoni shortage, the type of pepperoni that they used. So a lot of people there were restaurants in Buffalo that started buying, instead of buying the sliced cup pepperoni that they could pop on there and have it bake up, there was like a rush on, and I believe a shortage in the area on stick pepperoni, because if you took the stick pepperoni and sliced it on a slicer, it would cup and char the same way.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Definitely different than the.
It's called cup and char. That's like the
cup and char is what Hormel refers to it as,
and it's mostly for baking.
And it's pretty much exclusively for pizza and for like I said,
gets
buffalo.
Gets a nice ring, and
it gets the ring, pops up a little grease in the center. Yeah, gotcha. It's delicious. It's so good.
God, intermittent fasting, I'm hungry.
So yeah, during the lockdown there was a shortage of it, and restaurants in Buffalo had to get creative.
And then for the setup for Flea Market Madness, it's just the glasses have a little video thing. It's nothing special. I broke them though. A few years back, I broke the something on the glasses. I could probably glue it though.
Hello again, Pat and Ian. It's Blake here from Frisco, Texas, and
Frisco.
Me and my friend recently started a podcast. We're about 10 episodes in now. We talk about historical films and how historically accurate they are. We're really, really big fans of history, and I really heard that you liked the movie Glory, and I was wondering if there's any other historical films that you or maybe Ian like. I'd love to hear them. Thanks.
Glory's fantastic. I mean, it's almost underrated how good Glory is. Other historical movies that I like, Tora, Tora, Tora is really good. That's fantastic. That's the Pearl Harbor movie I believe that was the 60s they made that. And that was awesome because I told it from both sides,
right?
The movie. It went back and forth. So it wasn't just like demonizing all the Japanese. It was like, well, these are real people too, and they're making decisions, and they realize, oh, we fucked up. But there was like, you know, it's always that person that says, we shouldn't do this.
Right.
We shouldn't bomb Pearl Harbor. Like that actually, there was, you know, some debate about things like that. But now that we bomb, we're kind of stuck. You know, so that was awesome. And that went all the way through Midway, I believe. Like, so that was like over like a whole year, I think, of time, or year and a half, whatever it was. Or 2 years, whatever it was. So that was that. Midway, I think, is a movie as well, but I don't remember that as much as Tora, Tora, Tora. And then Braveheart isn't... I like Braveheart, but obviously people don't really know what the hell happened back then. It's kind of hard to know exactly what happened with William Wallace. You know, he was a guy, but he wasn't doing all that stuff to that extent. So that's a tougher one. I'm trying to think of a World War II one, a battle one that I like. I would just say Band of Brothers again. I'd say go towards that.
Always talk about Band of Brothers.
That's probably the closest you're going to get, because they interviewed those guys at the end of that. They interviewed those guys. Are still the one guy, the main guy, is still alive. He's been in his like late 90s by now, from New Jersey, who's the main character in it. They all interviewed them at the end of the series. This is late 90s, so they were like by then like in their late 70s, and it's so weird. You see this series with all these guys, then it cuts to the real people that it's based upon, and it's like, holy, it's like a shot to the gut. Like, wow. And then they start getting that misty-eyed, you know, war cry thing. You're like, oh, God, I'm going to lose it. You start crying yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I remember him. My friend, he died, like, right next to me in the foxhole or whatever. You're like, oh, my God, I can't take it. But that's probably more accurate because, I mean, World War II wasn't that long ago, but you talk to the guys that were there. It wasn't glorified Band of Brothers at all. It was like, this was rough business and bad and random. Like, you see, like, oh, those guys are going to, you know, they're dead. Those are the guys who were following for 4 episodes. Now they're dead. Like, because that's how it was. That's how war was. You didn't know when you're going to go. What's next here? God, I want to watch Band of Brothers. I have a DVD set. It's like a tin DVD set. Uncured Pepperoni. This is from Josh.
Hey, Padney. It's Josh. Quick question. Have you guys ever done the podcast and had to go to the bathroom, like, super bad? And you thought you might piss or shit yourself? Thanks.
Yes, it happened to me. I shit myself in first grade.
No, they said during the podcast.
Oh, during the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. But because the question, there's a little thing that says, teacher, can you go to the bathroom? May you. But no, I'll tell the teacher story. I never have. It kind of never talks.
I'm pretty sure you've told this
story. I'll tell it again because it was horrifying.
Anyways, yes, I generally have to pee very bad at the end of every episode.
I'll retell the story where I crap my pants in school. because it never happened again before or after, and it wasn't my fault. It was first grade, my Catholic grade school, and it was like you had 1A, 1B, 1C. You had three classes,
right?
For most, I think most of four. I was in 1A, and then 1C was another teacher. I remember at the time, I never saw her after this year. Maybe this traumatized her. This event, she was there for about 1 year, and that was it. She was a younger blonde. Everyone looks super old when you're 6 years old. Looking back, she's probably like 25. But in my head, my memory, she was like 40. You know what I mean? You can't get ages right when you're that young.
Right.
She took over the class. I think our teacher had to go do something. Had to go somewhere for something for like a half hour, 20 minutes. This teacher took over. When our teacher takes over, everyone thinks they can get away with things and talk. Everyone started talking more. She got annoyed at all of the kids talking. In the middle of this, I'm like, I gotta go to the bathroom. So I'm like, excuse me, can I go to the bathroom? And she just straight said no, like meanly. Like, and I was a nice kid. I didn't talk that much in class.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, I gotta go to the bathroom.
I need to go.
You're 6 years old.
Yeah.
And then it just happened. And you didn't know it was coming. It just happened.
Right.
And then the girl next to me was like, he stinks. And then it was embarrassing. And then the teacher figured out.
It smells like poo.
I think the teacher figured out I made a huge error.
Yeah.
The teacher realized it from the back of the room and then shuffled me out. She said, go to the nurse's office. And then that was my experience. And then never saw the teacher again after that year. Maybe.
Oh, really?
No, I'm serious. So maybe teaching wasn't for that woman.
Yeah, maybe they realized that that was a bad idea.
I let a kid crap his pants. Thankfully, that didn't stay with me throughout, because that can ruin a kid in grade school.
Oh yeah,
enough kids. That didn't. That was just like no. It was a thing.
I'm glad it didn't ruin you.
No, but anyway, sorry. What was I saying? Oh no, on the podcast. No, we usually do our nature calls before the podcast. Usually, all right. We got a couple more here.
Ciao, Pat and Leon. I am Luca from Italy. I wanted to say that I really like the podcast, and I wanted to ask both of you about the struggles you found in writing the guidebooks. What is the hardest thing you encounter in the writing process? And also, an experience with the Patreon blog, because I'm thinking to start one to do more writing experience. outside the more formal articles of the journalism course I follow. And if both of you have any advice for writing in general, thanks. Arrivederci.
Paisan, Luca. Advice for writing in general? Writing is like a tool. You have to keep doing it to keep sharp.
I think for the book, for me, I'll just say real quick, writing towards a collective style is not easy for me.
Review writing is very specific. It's you're writing nonfiction about something that's fiction. It's interesting. It's interesting because a lot of people, I think, by default, don't know how to do it well or know the style until you get into it. So we have you know, multiple writers, and some have experience, some don't. And even a good writer, someone that is a competent writer, can say, yeah, I can write a game review, and they really it's hard to wrap your mind around it if you haven't done it, and to really get used to the flow of it and the style of it without falling into traps like referencing other games, for example.
Yes,
that's a big trap that happens with professionals, even on websites. They always compare games to other games. You can't do that if you're trying to have the review stand on its own. Otherwise, you got to know about the other games. It's like reviewing a movie, saying, "Well, this movie's like." Forrest Gump. Well, what is Forrest Gump like? I never saw it. You can't do that, especially in a book that's a compendium guidebook. And yes, and there should be not an overall total consistency of style necessarily, but consistency of tone of how you're reviewing these games. You have to keep consistent across a team of writers. And that's not hard to figure out, but you have to nudge the writers in a certain direction and be like, okay, you can't go this hard on this. You have to be more reasonable. You have to review in its time space. And there's also unconscious biases that come across from some writers for specific genres they don't like, where it's like, well, if you don't like the genre, you can't criticize the game because of the genre. You have to accept the genre for what it is. And that comes across more often than you think, where people are like, well, I don't like this game. Well, maybe you don't like the genre.
Right,
and you shouldn't be reviewing the game, and that's something that comes across as well. Like, you can't say, "Well, this fishing game is boring." Maybe that's how the fishing game's supposed to be. It's going to take some time to reel in a fish. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, you can't. You have to separate the two. You have to think, okay, for this genre and its time, is this a good game? Not whether or not I prefer the genre or not. Those are the biggest pitfalls that have been encountered. There, it's like, and plus, making sure you really understand the game's mechanics before you jump in and play it and review it. If you don't understand the game's mechanics, you should not be criticizing the game's mechanics, unless you totally understand the game's mechanics and how it should function as a competent player. That's a big one, especially for like a racing game that's not an arcade racing game. You have to understand that a sim racing game is not an arcade racing game you can just jump in and be good at. You have to learn how to play the game. You have to learn how the cars react. You have to learn how to modify your cars. So these are things that you have to make sure the writer, do you know how to play the game? Have you taken the time to play it? Have you read the instruction manual? Have you done this? Those are the pitfalls. But in terms of being a good writer, you have to write. You cannot be a stagnant writer. It goes away like anything else. And also, to be a good writer, you have to read. You have to read a lot to be a better writer as well. A couple more here. That's my master class on video game review writing right there. I'll do a whole thing.
Hey, Ian. Hey, Pat. Sebastian from Texas here. Just wanted to ask you guys, what would you do if, say, Pat blew both of your savings at the Atari casino and your only option was to start selling off your respective collections? How would you guys go about doing it? What would go first? And what would you desperately try to hang on to?
I like the cadence and rhythm of that question. What would go first? What would you desperately try to hang on to?
Jesus.
Well, he's already sold a chunk of his collection.
Yeah, so it gets harder for me because I've already really narrowed down my... There are only like three things. I tried to say there are three things that I still collect. I collect records, collect Game Boy games, black and white mostly, but portable Game Boy games, and I collect PC Engine games. As much as I like the Game Boy, I think my Game Boy stuff would go first. It's not like it's a lot of it's worth a ton, but I do have some games that are worth 50-60 bucks. But that's stuff that I like having the little cartridges. I love little game cartridges, like Game Boy size. Switch, too small. Don't find
that's
them,
too small.
Don't find them cute or anything.
You want
like
something
that.
You can accidentally swallow. That's too small.
But I think Game Boy cartridges in particular are just.
You get
the perfect
you get
size.
Nice art on it.
I love them.
You can stack them in your hands.
So that's why I collect them, also because they were cheap.
Like uncured pepperoni?
Yes, like uncured pepperoni. However, the emulation, or the flash carts, for portable systems seem to be pretty much rock solid in terms of what they can run. It would probably be easiest for me to
Game Boy Flash
to do a Game Boy Flash cart, and so I could regain, I could get that experience again. I think easiest with a Game Boy Flash cart. With CD stuff like the PC Engine, it's very difficult because you have to go and find those fairly specific ISOs. You have to go find
which are out there.
They're
out there. You have to hunt them down.
You have to hunt them down, or you rip them yourself for the harder games. It would be a lot more hunting. The Hue card stuff wouldn't be as big of a deal, but the CD ISOs
probably a torrent for all the ISOs probably.
And also, I hear that Super System 3 works very well, but I guess it's not 100%. That's the Terra Onion one that also emulates the CD drive that you can put on the back. So, I think it'd probably be Game Boy stuff. Records would be the last to go, but I really do need to call that collection down a little bit.
The records?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of shit in my collection.
Now, it's time-wise, would you piece it out or just sell it to a dealer and get less money, but then you get rid of it all at once?
If I had to get rid of records, a large chunk of it would be pieced out.
You take the time. That's the thing. Do you have the time to piece it out? That's the thing. I would not, obviously.
Any record over 100, I would piece out.
So I bought a lot of stuff at the swap meet back when the days when I tell Ian, I went every Saturday and Sunday for like 2 years straight. So I call you in the morning and annoy you. But, hey, Ian, you want this Snoopy thing? You're like, oh, I'm sleeping. I'm like, come on, it's like 8:30. Get up.
No.
I bought a lot of stuff thinking, well, I hate my day job that I quit. I quit my day job, 2012? I quit my day job. So I bought stuff thinking, well, worst case scenario, I quit my job because it's killing me. As Ian said, made my face gray. I looked gray.
You looked very gray.
I could spend time piecing this stuff out. And that's when it was on the upswing, the value on a lot of stuff. I could sell this stuff piecemeal that I pick up, some of this stuff I didn't want for my collection anymore. But that's a lot of time. That's a job. To do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a job. I have a job. I wear multiple hats. So I don't have the time to do that. So if I had to, though, how desperate am I? Yes, for like the most expensive stuff, we're talking high three figures, four figure stuff. Yes, that stuff I'd probably maximize because that's a smaller amount of things. But for the bulk stuff, if a game's worth $100 and I have a lot of them, I don't care if I get, $50 in cash for it. And just get rid of them all at once because the time is worth money. Time is money, and I could do that. But if I had no money, then yes, you'd have to piece it out and that'd be your job. But I don't want to picture that as being a job selling thousands of games. That seems miserable. There's so much. First of all, eBay and PayPal takes like 15% off the top right there, and then it's the time, and then you need to deal with people with the corner on this game is off. Like if you sell any boxed or sealed stuff. On eBay, God bless you, because I remember even selling some stuff where it's like, oh, this is a little bit, and it's like, there's asshole collectors that want to try to get free stuff from you. There's ones that'll just nitpick you to death. It happened all the time. Back when I did try to sell stuff here and there, that, like we're talking 10 years ago. So that's like that, I can't picture doing that again. Any high grade stuff that I sell, the more I think about it, it would not be eBay. It'd be private collectors. It would not be eBay sales. I cannot picture selling something for $2,000 on eBay and then getting into a PayPal dispute over it. I just can't.
Oh, God.
And then getting potentially taken for a ride with some sort of fraud thing. You kidding me? Imagine selling a Magical Chase. Oh, no, he sent me another game instead. It's like, oh, you fucking kidding me? Like, no. But you hear horror stories happen sometimes with people try to do things like that. We got one or two more. Here's one here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Sean from Washington. I remember you guys covered the analog digital to analog converter a while back, and I just wanted to know, do you guys still use CRT TVs or monitors? And what are your general feelings towards the technology? Thanks.
The general feeling towards CRTs, they're fine. What do you mean? They're fine. I mean, like if you have one, you have the consoles to play it, then the CRT is the way to go.
Yeah,
that's the way it was intended.
I feel like it's the easiest solution to a lot of these modern problems too. If you have the room in your house for a CRT TV, go get a CRT TV and hook your games up to it. What do I use? So in the living room, I have a flat screen. It's not a 4K. It's 1080p Samsung that I hook up my PC Engine to. I run it through a RetroTINK SCART 2X and it looks fantastic. But I do hook up, there are systems that I definitely hook up to the CRT TV. almost every time I want to play something on the Wii or on the GameCube via the Wii, I hook it up on the CRT TV.
You gotta go with a component instead?
I don't have the component. I don't have stuff for it. It's easier for me to just hook it up directly to the CRT TV. The Saturn looks great on a CRT TV, so sometimes we'll just hook the Saturn up to the CRT TV. We do actually have a CRT, and we use it. So I have things that I can use on the HD TV to make them look nice, but I do keep a CRT TV because it's easy to just plug it in, turn it on, and play. The big thing is rhythm games on the PlayStation 1. The timing gets all screwed up when you try to play it on an HD TV.
It's just off that little couple.
So if you want to play like PlayStation 1 DDR, or if you want to play the Bust a Move games, really there's no other way to do it but a CRT. The original Prep of the Rapper off a disc, you're going to want to play that on a CRT.
It's really that more unplayable?
It's very, very bad.
Wow.
Very bad. Very hard.
Even using like a retro tank and other things?
I've never been able to play certain rhythm games properly on an HD TV.
Wow, there you go. CRTs will never die. Never die. All right, that's it for this session. Session of voicemails.
That's it, we're done.
And we're done with the podcast. Thank you so much, everyone. Right, we just hit the 2-hour mark here. Thought it'd be a quicker one today, I guess not. No. What do we go long on?
Intro.
It's like me and Ian hanging out, the intro. We hang out, we have our uncured bacon.
We did like 15 minutes on college ball.
Oh, sorry, not 15 minutes. But speaking of uncured bacon, I said that because I bought uncured bacon by accident. I thought my bacon was rotted because it smells. And I was like, that's why they cure bacon, because it fucking smells.
But curing is preservation with salt.
But also, it gets rid of the smell. There's a bad smell to these pork products if you don't cure them as well.
Yeah.
I literally thought my bacon went bad. I just bought it. Like, why does it smell bad? And I cooked it. I'm like, no, it tastes fine. It's just there's a smell to it that when you cure it, it doesn't have the smell anymore. So never again am I buying uncured bacon. And I guess it's an advantage because it doesn't have all the extra, what did they cure it with?
Salt.
It is salt, yeah, but it's like, I'd rather have my bacon not smell like it's rotting. I'll take the extra salt. But that's why you get the uncured stuff. You save on the salt.
Yes.
But I did read that, this is now extra napkins. I did read that uncured stuff is still cured, but they use something out of celery to cure it. It's a natural thing that isn't salt-based. So, like, it's still... You technically still have to cure it in some way. It's
sure.
Not,
just not salt-curing.
Not just salt-cured. You still have to do it or else the meat can go bad.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Interesting curing technology going on there. All right, is that it?
That's it.
Thanks, everyone. It's fun. Catch me on the Twitch. We're having fun every Wednesday. It's my home away from home. Twitch.tv/countrycode. Alright, that's Ian.
It's me.
I'm Pat. Try not to be too critical on these college kids playing basketball. Alright, we'll see you later.
Bye.